Well, this session is entitled Worming, an Experiment in Online Discography. If you expected the session on contemporary veterinary practices or on new fishing tackle and bait, this is the wrong place. You need to go somewhere else. Yeah, I just need to get the
work pages up.
Yeah, I need to get the access database. Anyway, this is not a PowerPoint, so you're going to find a few glitches here and there, and I didn't bring my own machine, so I can't exactly control this, but who cares? This is fun anyway. So I'm going to start by saying, who doesn't know what WERM is? E-R-M. World's Encyclopedia of Recorded Music. It's a classical discography made up about 50 or so years ago. And when I mentioned WERM in the context of this talk, it is to be put in quotation marks because I'm really not doing WERM. I'm doing a WERM-like thing there. Well, that's good. That's what we want to start with, which is the first page of the World's Encyclopedia of Recorded Music, the first volume published in 1952. Now, with those preliminaries, let me get going very quickly, and I'm going to read this. It's in big type, so you could probably read it from the back of the room, but I need it up here. Okay. Remember those exciting early days of the internet when our 401ks and FERS accounts were doubling every month, and the sky was the limit for internet startups and our retirement dreams? This was the era of so-called category killers, those internet applications so well designed and so well executed that they would erase all competition. One of those wannabe category killers was Ondanti.com. How many people knew about Ondanti.com? Good. Okay, that's good. Ondanti.com debuted in the year 2000 with a capitalization of $10 million and a big-time roster of artistic partners, including the London Symphony Orchestra, the Philadelphia Orchestra, and conductor Pierre Boulez, who appeared at the debut of the website in New York when the press conference occurred. By marrying a bang-up website with an innovative line of historical CDs, Ondanti looked like a sure category killer. One reason they thought it was going to prevail, and I hoped it would prevail, was Ondanti's ambition to be the one-stop resource for classical music. For those willing to pay Ondanti's fee, members could, in theory, find just about anything they wanted to know about classical music. Knowing about the recordings of the famous musicians of the past and present day would become my Ondanti department. And on the recommendation of a noted French collector, yours truly took his post as Ondanti's discographer, providing each month four discographies of famous artists such as Toscanini, Horowitz, Heifetz, and Boulez himself. And, what's more, getting paid for it. Well, I think you know the rest of the story by now. Ondanti burned through its $10 million bucks in record time, and by the fall of 2002, its discographer, me, was out of a job. Ondanti's ambitions were worthy and encyclopedic. It was its business model that was flawed. When they began their work in the late 1940s, the compilers of WERM, mainly Messrs. Clough and Cumming, in putting together the World's Encyclopedia of Recorded Music, had ambitions were at least as grand as those of Ondanti. By building on the work of New York's Gramophone Shop and drawing on a worldwide network of helpers and correspondents, WERM's editors fill 3.5 volumes with data that have long served as the best and so far only systematic overview of classical music recorded between 1925 and 1955. So you may be asking, I hope you do, what makes anyone think you can reinvent, expand on, or maybe even surpass the achievement of WERM? Or to put it another way, are you nuts? No. Well, let me answer that question with a little personal history. Anyone who aspires to be a researcher is driven by some particular obsessions. Mine are discography and the history of the technique of classical sound recording, a topic that occupied me for about a decade between 1984 and 1994. That recording history included the assembly of a rough chronology of the class A recordings of the Decca UK record label, a goal that his Philip Stewart, another discographer and colleague, recently realized in a more complete electronic form in the United Kingdom. Electronic form, isn't that where we came over on Dante, which was an electronic gateway to everything you wanted to know about classical music? But first, a little more personal history. Beginning in 1996, I began to visit other record company archives, aiming to do a Decca for companies like Deutsche Grammophon, Philips, Electrola, EMI France, and the like. Naturally, I traveled a bit here and there, and when friends or my wife asked me how I enjoyed, say, Paris, I had pictures like this one, and I see if I can get this to... Let's see here. We need the next slide. Sorry, this is a PDF in the midst of pictures. That's it. It's okay. That's what I get for doing. Yeah, all the way over to the left. Left. That's it. That one. Okay, very good. I have pictures like this one, that one, to show where I was really working. At least that's what I said. No, I really was working there. And working and, like this one, the second one, please, to show you with whom I was working. These are three very nice French ladies at the EMI France Archives in Saint-Lois-le-Mont, which is in an industrial park about 35 kilometers northwest of Paris. I can tell you the sad case, and the two folks, the one in the middle and the one on the right, have now departed the archives. The person on the left, Anix, is still there, and she's got her right hand on the most important tool an archivist can have, which is the Xerox machine. And I was very rarely away from that machine. In any event, after each of these trips yielded mountains of Xerox company paperwork and dozens of scribbled notebooks. The time had now come to transform this paper into an electronic tool that everyone could see and could use. Now let's talk about the format, and we're going to go to the next, thank you, next slide, and then we're going to want to go to the Access database, but we'll go step by step. Good. When Andante's web editors brought me on board, they specified that they wanted Microsoft Excel files of the artists I was to work on. These files would be converted into MS Access and fronted with an Andante search engine. The Andante format had to accommodate LPs, CDs, and 78s, and was limited to the basic discographic, if limited, information for 78s, matrix prefix, if any, the matrix number, and in a few instances, the take number, and the first release numbers in America and overseas. When a title was reissued, I would list the primary LP and CD numbers in the entry. I began the Worm project by importing all of the Andante Excel files into the Worm Access database. One of these files was called Conductor and contained the Andante discographies I had compiled on artists such as Toscanini, Furtwängler, Weingartner, Pierre Monteux, and another former music director of the Boston Symphony, Charles Munch. Now, we're going to use Les Bons Charlies to play a little show and tell. I hope this works. And a little bit later to play another game, Can You Find Me? That's where you've got the little handouts. First of all, let's start with a piece, one of his standard repertoire pieces, Debussy's La Mer, led by Charles Munch in 1942. Here's the original, one of the original recording sheets from that session. It was one of the reasons I went to France was to find these. I knew they existed. No one else had gone, I guess, except the people doing the swing label, the jazz guys. They had already been there, already left, but they left the recording sheets. Thank you, whoever went. Anyway, very briefly, we'll take a look at this, and then we'll move right on. You can see that this contains artistic information, the pieces recorded, what they were released on, when a session was held, how many musicians were in the orchestra, and where the studio record was made, and recordings by Monsieur Ravanet, and held between 9 and 12 o'clock on the 2nd of March, 1942. I have tons of these things. They're really fascinating.
I'm just stretching.
Oh, good. No snoring allowed. That's all I ask. So what I want to be able to do is show you what this looks like in the Andante format. If we can go to the access file, please. There we go. Click on Lemaire 78. That's it. And this is the way it shows up in the database. Ta-da. So, in any event, we transcribed most of the information from the recording sheets going from left to right. The original release number, second column, date full. I should say there's another column called date initial, which applies to LPs, but I'll get to that in a minute. The place is Studio Albert. By the way, any of us, I know Seth Winter. If Seth here? Seth is in technical session, of course. Studio Albert was the original recording studio purchased by the Transoceanic Recording Company, which was Lindstrom in the continent. It was used by French Columbia at Lindstrom and then by EMI companies after 1934. If you've ever heard records made there, you wonder how come they sound so boxy. Well, in my researches, I discovered that this studio had the following dimensions: 58 feet long, 36 feet wide, and 19 feet high. That's about 40,000 cubic feet. You could probably put, if you put that sort of ensemble in a room of this size, you get the sound that they got from Studio Albert. In any event, you can see the rest of the information here, including the CD number, which was the transfers that were made by Seth Winter in about the year 2000. Now, if we can go back to the Access Lemaire for a minute, please. Sorry. That's it. And go to Lemaire, please. Okay. We're going to skip a... If we can do right-click on that and go up to Design View, that's it, and take out 2LA. 2LA. Sorry, I would have left myself. Just take that out. That's good. And take out Lemaire there and go all the way over this way. And take up Munch. Now we're going to play a little game. Good. And then we just need to open this up. And it should work the way I planned it. Oh, wait, just 1 second. Take out, pardon me. I'm sorry to do this to you. This needs to be non-ascending. All we need is date initial ascending. These two should disappear. Apologies. That's right. Okay, yeah, that's good. Don't take out work. And just, good. And now we just turn this on and see what happens. A little exclamation point up at the top. Okay. That's good. Now, this is really not quite the way I wanted it, but in any event, what I was planning to do, let's see, have we got a minute for me to do this? No. Do I? Hang on. 1 minute. Okay, what we're going to do is, where are we? Let's not do this. The point of this demonstration, if I had known what I was doing, was to take your little handouts and show you how much I had accomplished in doing what Worm was doing. Unfortunately, the way we did this was that they should be organized by date. But nonetheless, if you scroll down this way, I think it might work better. That's it. Okay. Keep going. In any event, there we go. That's actually pretty good. That's good. We need to expand it to get the piece of music. But in any event, and you can look at this later when I show you where it's going to be, the idea was that you could actually match up what was on here with what's on your sheet. And I would play a bingo game, and you would tell me what you saw. I guess it didn't work, and I'm running out of time. But in any event, we need to expand work. That's good. This'll do. So if we continue down this way, you can play bingo if you want, but you see these are the dated sessions and what was appearing on those sessions. If we go this way down the file, you can get an idea of what the repertoire was being recorded. Nobody needs to say bingo at this point. But you can tell date by date how the repertoire was being built. And this is one of the reasons this is designed this way, to see how repertoire was being built. If we push it that way rather than this way, it's better. That's it. Keeping the date in the... So if we move down in time, you can see how the repertoire is being built. The image, the prelude, the petite suite, clair de lune, there are millions of clair de lunes, the violin's not a prelude again. And you can see in this sort of presentation how in 78 they were building the repertoire of a musician as famous as Debussy. Not as famous as Verdi, but famous enough. If we keep going down, further, 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 we have 1956 entries under Debussy. So this is just the 78s. Just the 78s. Just 1929. 1930. Goodness, there's a lot. Etc., 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 etc. And we keep moving. And we're about halfway there. We keep moving further and further and further. Good. At this point, it becomes much more fun because the whole purpose of this project was to replicate what was in Worm, and I apologize for the route-step version of this, was to replicate what was in Worm but expand it. And that expansion was to be beyond 1955. Number one, number two, including information of a discographic nature, which is the place and date of recording. And you notice in this entry we have date full. Date full is an LP for LP sessions. Many LPs are made over several dates. There's a date initial, which is the first date of session, date LP, date full, which is the rest of the session. And it continues on until 1999, at which point I think we're going to stop. But anyway, I'm going to shorten this by describing what I have not done in this little project, and then I'll show you where you can actually see the data. I guess people, how many people are aware of Alan Kelly's CDs? Some of you are. Alan Kelly is a British collector who has prepared CDRs of the output of the Gramophone Company in its various national disguises. What appears in here does not duplicate Kelly. I also didn't do Victor. Victor, of course, is being done in Santa Barbara. I haven't done many small pre-1930 labels in Germany and the continent. Those are going to come later. What I did do is what other people hadn't done. And I went to France, as stated before, for EMI companies and French Polydor, to Germany for Telefunken and Post-War Electrola, to the British Library in London for unpublished data on Lindstrom discs sold or recorded outside Germany, to Budapest and Prague, for us to Ultrafon, Supraphon, and Hungaritone, to New York for American Columbia, and that's just the 78s. I think you can see I really am crazy. In any event, a project like this depends not just on what you can find yourself, but what other people have helped you find. And I need to thank in this presentation a number of people. First of all, there are people who helped me personally. Chief among those is a gentleman named Tom Peel in the United Kingdom. Secondly, I want to thank those researchers who published discographies from which I took information. And thirdly, I want to thank anybody in advance who can help me with this because it's it's sort of a project that's going to take forever. In any event, I want to conclude by paying tribute to someone else who tried to do roughly the same thing, but not in a database format. There was a gentleman at the British Institute of Recorded Sound named Eric Hughes. Some of you may have met Eric when you visited London while he was still at the British Institute, later to become the National Sound Archive. Eric was the associate editor of the final Worm volume. And after Eric joined the British Institute, he continued to collect new Worm entries on little tiny cards. From time to time, Eric would share these cards with myself and with others, and I, in return, would send him data on new Japanese records he otherwise would have missed. Thousands of slips of paper bearing his unique handwriting now reside in the National Sound Archive at the British Library. Their future use and accessibility remains uncertain. I wouldn't have had to do this if Eric's cards had been put into a better form, but nonetheless, there it is. For now, there is still much work to be done, both in the way I do presentations and in discography, which is, after all, not rocket science. What else is there to do? In these notebooks I mentioned a while back, set data for Hungaroton, Supraphon, and EMI LPs from the 50s, 60s, and 70s that are patiently awaiting their debut in the database. Perhaps there will be further expeditions and further notebooks to fill in Bucharest and Warsaw, where old labels of pre-1989 vintage remain active, if apparently on life support. Spain and Italy are calling. There was much LP activity there. And then there were the mail order labels, Musical Masterpiece Society, World Record Club, Great American names like Urania Period, Haydn Society, my head is hurting, and so on and on it goes. All right. I envisioned this as a retirement project. I'm still actually working. And it will be, I can guarantee. Whether it will match achievement to goal, only my fingers, travel budget, and the actuary tables will be able to tell. Thanks. Now, yes.
How did you attend, or were you thinking about the way that this would be used?
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
That brings me to where you can see this. Actually, if you have your pens and pencils ready and use my little sheets, which we didn't really use, take down this URL, DISMARC, Dismarc. About a year ago, I made contact with the folks at Dismarc, which is a European website financed by the European Union, to make available catalogs of less-known collections and collections of everything in the European Union. They agreed to add an American, my data, to the Dismarc website. But keep in mind that that data is a year old. It's not as, quote, good as this, but it's not so bad, and it would be worth taking a look at. Secondly, there's the website of CHARM, Center for the Historical Analysis of Recorded Music. I can give you the URL if I can find it. CHARM. Well, anyway, if you put CHARM into your web browser, it'll come up with a website. CHARM had a 5-year grant from the British authorities to do many things regarding the study of sound recordings, and one of those projects was discographic. Basically, CHARM's discographic website is not alive yet, but it will be next month. But let's see here. One sec.
I'll give you the URL. It's not live yet, but here you go.
I'll speak slowly. Okay, CHARM dot CCH.KCL.AC.UK. And you may want to add N-STG after CHARM. That website goes live next month. That includes 5 of the Kelly volumes, XML'd, that is, they're searchable, published volumes, French, Russian, German, Dutch, and I forget the...
Italian.
Very good. It includes XML versions of those catalogs. It does not include any of his Matrix series. It does include about a two-month-old version of this. It is being refined as we speak, and it should be more useful. Now, I'm still looking for a home for this little baby. I don't see any hands go up, but I have talked to... Really? We'll talk later. The bottom line is this, and I'll be short, brief. I accumulated about a two-yard stack of paper in doing this part of the project. I couldn't share the paper with anybody. It was useless. The Andante experience gave me the wherewithal to put a limited amount of information into an Excel file. A friend of mine 2 years ago said, "Why don't you use Access?" And I said, "Okay." And we end up with this. By the way, there is another file. This is actually about 166,000 lines. There's another file of about 50,000 of items that I don't have composers for. So we end up with 200,000 lines, and my fingers still hurt. Any more questions before we...
If we can keep it real short.
Okay, sorry.
One more. Okay. Mike?
Yes.
Is anybody working on TVA, OEA?
Yeah, me. Don't. It's going to happen. I thank you for your patience, and I'm sorry we didn't get to play our little game.